originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, flying solo on the program here tonight as the Pontiff of the Pick Four is enjoying a little bit of R&R before we make our way to Gulfstream Park this Saturday for our exclusive coverage of the $1 million Florida Derby. Want to welcome everybody tuning in across North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201. And of course, all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer and mobile devices. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you along for the next hour as we visit with another guest who has made quite a mark in the world of thoroughbred racing. And you think back of all the years that we've been hosting this Trainer Talk program and bringing it your way. It's hard to believe that we have never had the opportunity to visit with this trainer here tonight, but we finally get the chance, and boy, is she good. Tonight's guest, well, she grew up where all great trainers grow up. Where else? Detroit, Michigan. Yeah, the hotbed of trainers. She began training on her own in 1981. Since that time, she has saddled 2,062 winners in a career that has seen her runners earn more than $38 million in purses. She is trainer Kathleen O'Connell, and she is with us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
$38 million in purses. I guess when I see you, I guess you'll be picking up the check for dinner?
Yeah, sure.
Quite impressive. You've come a long way since those early days in the Motor City.
Yes, Detroit was a great learning experience, and a lot of good horsemen came out of Detroit.
Yeah, a bunch did, and I joke about Detroit being a hotbed for horse trainers, but at the time that you were growing up, Detroit did have a racetrack. Detroit Racecourse was alive and well.
Well, they actually had two racecourses. We had Detroit Racecourse, and we had Hazel Park, which, of course, was the 5/8 of a mile bull ring, and the days were divided up between Hazel Park and DRC.
You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Massachusetts Fair Circuit. I grew up in Western Massachusetts, and at one point, the Massachusetts Fair Circuit was extremely strong, and I've met so many people over the past 15 or 20 years that I've been doing this radio show that came from those Massachusetts Fair Circuits. And you, as you said, there are a lot of good horsemen that came out of Detroit because of the fact that you had those racetracks there.
Exactly. And, you know, we race pretty much year-round except the bad months. You know, would usually end somewhere around Thanksgiving, and a lot of people would go to the fairgrounds or down south. And most people that had Michigan breds would just turn out for the months of December, January, and February, and that'd start to gear back up in March. And usually someplace around April, they would reopen again.
What was Detroit like, Detroit Racecourse?
Detroit was great. It was a great big mile track. Of course, we knew nothing about turf racing in Michigan because we didn't have any turf tracks. And, you know, we had a good, solid group of horsemen, and we had a lot of racing. We had a lot of great riders, not only great trainers. And it was really a good place to grow up and get into the business.
Was your plan always to train horses?
No. My plan was seriously derailed. Actually, I had never been on the racetrack until the last year. I think I was in high school. I had applied for veterinarian school, and I had a 3.8 average, graduated 110th out of a class of 750, National Honor Society, 8 years in 4-H. two seasons at the extension at Michigan State for a couple different veterinarian little summer programs, and I kind of was just planning on going to vet school. And when I got rejected from vet school, it just kind of turned everything into an upside-down thing because I was never one that really liked school. The only thing that kept me in school and through school was sports. I mean, as short as I am, I was probably taller back then. I played basketball, I swam, I ran track, and it just seemed without any focus in the educational world as far as trying to build on going to vet school, I was just kind of didn't want to go to school just to go to school.
Wow, how could they not accept you with a resume like that?
Well, back in the days in the late 60s and early 70s, they would, you know, according to the gentleman I spoke to, they would only usually take two girls a year, and you had to have a 4.0. So I was, you know, a notch below that. And it's just amazing. The only place I was accepted into vet school was Colorado. And between the out-of-state tuition and the boarding and everything else, you know, it just would have been economically unfeasible.
Do you kind of look at it as being a blessing in disguise now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had a career, a very passionate career in a business that I've loved and grew up in, you know, from starting out walking horses to, you know, them finding out I could ride to ponying to thinking that, you know, I had shown horses and rode horses in 4-H and thinking, geez, these guys get paid to go around in a circle. I mean, that's nothing compared to what we were doing, you know. So, you know, the next thing you knew, I broke show horses. You know, I got the invitation from Sherman Armstrong, who was a great 2-year-old rider and a great horseman himself, to go to Ocala and break babies. And when I broke babies, they had a few older horses that they were laying up that, you know, we got to leg up. And because, you know, of course, riding show horses, you don't stand up in the saddle and you balance a little different, but I mean, it's still riding a horse.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was in the height of my glory. I mean, I'm riding horses and getting paid for it. I mean, how much better is this than that?
Yeah, I think at that point, I guess you knew that you found a home in this industry, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, after years of galloping, because I came on the racetrack in 69, 70, walking hots, and actually I laugh, and I still have it someplace, even through several moves. My very first license says Pony Boy, because there weren't any girls that got pony licenses or exercise girl licenses or anything like that. So I still have that license somewhere. But, you know, it was great. And after, you know, 10 years or more of galloping horses, you know physically you're not going to be able to endure it the rest of your life. So that's when I, you know, really felt lucky between all the people that I had been around galloping. You learn every day in this business, even now, 40 years later. But you learn from other people and you learn their methods, and you know, I just feel like I tried to surround myself with good people, and I got a good education the hard way.
I love that story about your first license and having it say Pony Boy. And you know, so often I've had so many female trainers on this program over the years, and every single one of them will say, you know what, I don't look at myself like that. I'm a horse trainer. And I agree.
Exactly.
110%. And that's something that you've maintained throughout your entire career. But when you first come on the scene and you see that license that says Pony Boy, is that something that you kind of take offense to, or is it something that motivates you?
Not at all. I just laughed about it for years. I laughed about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure nowadays I could sue somebody over it for mental trauma.
Yeah, times have changed a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can still remember when they had the trailer set up at Hialeah, and Kathy Kushner that rode the Olympics was trying to ride, and they said there'd never be any girl riders. And, you know, I mean, the business, even in my lifetime, has come a long way.
Yeah, so how proud are you, Kathleen, of everything that you've been able to accomplish in this sport? The greatest stakes victories, all the career wins, the purse earnings. You've had to work and fight your way through everything that you've gotten in this career of yours. How proud are you?
Well, I mean, I'm proud of it because there isn't anybody in my family or any relatives or anything that had anything to do with the horse business. And I just think that it shows that perseverance pays. And nothing happens overnight, nothing. Not the horse world, not the restaurant world, you know, not anything. But I just do believe if you have a passion at it that, you know, and you work hard, that you can make it happen.
Well, you've certainly done that. She is trainer Kathleen O'Connell, who is with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you just heard, she started from the ground up, and she has worked her way into being one of the premier trainers that we have in the game today, and she should be very proud of that particular accolade, no doubt about it. Kathleen, last year you picked up win number 2,000. It was a milestone win for you, and I know that that had to be a very special day.
Yes, it was, and it was even more special because it was a first-time starter, which, you know, a lot of trainers are claiming, shaking, moving trainers, and I'm not. I'm more, I like the younger horse. I like seeing them develop and going through all their phases. So to me, it was especially meaningful with a two-year-old.
As you were getting closer to that milestone, I've had several trainers tell me that things got a little harder. They started pressing a little bit. How about for you?
Oh, no, I didn't feel pressing or under pressure. I just felt bad because every owner I have wanted to be that one.
Yeah, they want to support you too, right?
Well, like I say, it was very, very special for me. But like I say, the people that I had been affiliated with a long time just thought that that would be great if their horse was the one that, you know, got the 2,000.
We started the interview talking about your upbringing and growing up in Detroit and being around Detroit Racecourse, and you mentioned Michigan State. So I'm assuming that you're still a Spartan fan. Is that right?
Oh, yes. My brother graduated from Michigan State, and he's a mechanical engineer. And my sister graduated from Wayne State, and she's a nurse. So I was really the only mucksack of the family that didn't graduate from college.
Well, I think that's turned out okay. Are you going to be watching the game on Friday night when they take on LSU?
Of course.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're going to make me stay up a little bit late because being a UK fan here in Lexington, they don't play until, I guess, 10 o'clock or something on Friday night. So it'll be a short day on Saturday when we broadcast the Florida Derby.
Yeah, I know. That'll be a real short day, right?
Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. All right, Kathleen, let's talk about some of the things that as you were coming up through the ranks and you were fighting and scratching and clawing. Let's talk about some of those things that you had to overcome in your career. What, when you look back now, what are some of the things that you say, wow, I can't believe I was there at one point?
Well, I mean, I think all trainers go through the period where, you know, through nobody's fault or anything like that, you have injuries, you have, you know, layups that you hadn't counted on. And, you know, thank God I was in the position where, you know, when that would happen, I could always just gallop some horses and keep on going. Where, you know, if I didn't have that ability, it would have been even harder because, you know, you can't control, you know, you have two or three horses ready to run and one bucks shins and one gets sick and, you know, one might have a small issue and need some time off and, you know, if you were a person that couldn't pony horses or couldn't gallop horses, you know, it would be a lot more devastating. You know, I've always said in my whole lifetime that the racetrack is the best place to be because really for a willing worker, there's no such thing as unemployment. I mean, there is always something to do on the racetrack, whether you walk hots or whether you'd groom, whether you'd pony, whether you'd gallop, you know, there's always something. You know, there was a point in time in my career, and I had done some leather work before in my lifetime. And, you know, then I started repairing saddles and doing billets on saddles and doing the booths out of the Jack's Room in Detroit. Like I say, there's always a way to make a living, always a way to make a living. And, you know, sure, it's, you know, maybe not exactly what you planned on at the time, but, you know, you've just got to make the best of it.
Yeah, and I can imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that as you're doing that, it's not the most glamorous job on the racetrack, but it's something that now when you look back on it, you have to feel thankful that you were able to come up the way you were and that you now have a knowledge of all these different facets of the business and that are probably helping you right now with your training career.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, I mean, even the tack repair, I have to laugh. You know, the people that just had one and two horses, I mean, getting the saddle fixed overnight was very important. I mean, otherwise you'd have to borrow one or whatever. You know, getting things done in a timely manner, you know, learning how to make the jack's boots last longer. I remember getting innovative and sewing rubber patches, rundown patches, 3Ms when they first came out. You know, just a lot of sort of different things, you know, trying to make things better or, you know, knowing where the rubbers really should be on draw reins versus, you know, where they might be if you ordered them from someplace or maybe making something special to help a horse that, you know, had a problem. So, you know, doing it from the ground up, you know, just made it a lot better.
I read a quote as I was getting ready for the show, and it was a quote that you gave to Ed Gray at Gulfstream Park shortly before you picked up that milestone win number 2000 last year. And part of the quote, I thought this was fascinating, and it's so true. You said, "It's the only business in the world," talking about horse racing, "where you leave at night and come back the next day and everything is different." I agree.
And it's very true. I mean, you know, we leave the barn and we come in, horses have a temperature, a horse got sick, a horse kicked the wall, his legs all blown up. I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, you leave and you come back and everything is different.
You started your career, Kathleen, with just two horses. Do you remember those two?
Yep, Saint I Ain't and Spicy Relation.
What do those two horses mean to you?
Well, it was the beginning of a, you know, a lifetime. Not that I knew it at the time, but.
Yeah, you had no idea. How did you come across those two horses?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, you know, back then even, you know, the racing's an expensive game, and sometimes they get a little injury. People can't afford to work on them, or they don't want to give them time, or they're a problem horse that, you know, might need a little extra something. So, you know, to me it was good that there was an avenue for these horses, not just for me, but for other people, you know. I knew a lot of exercise people that would take that one horse that needed some extra time or maybe needed jogging or maybe needed icing or that, you know, an owner that was paying a day pan, a horse, you know, didn't want to keep a cheap horse or a bottom maiden. You know, I always say there's a place for all these horses. You know, even if they're not competitive in my barn at Gulfstream, I can take them to Tampa. And if they're not competitive there, sometimes a cheaper track, or sometimes they just need another career. They weren't cut out to be what they were, no matter who they're by or who they're out of.
You talked about the fact that you were the only person in your family that kind of took this route of being involved with horse racing, and that none of your family really knew much about it. So when you decided to go to the racetrack and start working around the racetrack, what did your family and your parents think about that?
Well, they really didn't think it would last long because, you know, the hours are very early and it's, you know, physical work. But, you know, it just started a big time bomb. I'm sure, you know, back in the day, and especially my dad, he wasn't too happy about it to start with. But, you know, they just figured, well, a few weeks of this and it'll be out of our system. And it was quite the opposite, you know.
Yeah, what is it about this game that just gets in your blood?
Oh, I don't know. They always say, you know, there's something about the outside of a horse that's good for the inside of a man, and I think that's very true. And, I mean, even through school, I had a lot of jobs I hated, and I knew I really didn't want to work inside, you know. I mean, I knew that at an early age. So, you know, to me, you know, this was the perfect fix. so to speak. And, you know, now it's like I had told somebody at the banquet, I says, as old as I am, I just feel like a horse junkie looking for the next win.
That's a great statement, Kathleen. You know, you've been doing this a long time now, and you've had so much success, but there's still something there that still drives you and motivates you.
Exactly.
What's the number one motivating factor?
Well, I mean, I like the job, and I like the horses. I don't think you could pick out one motivating factor. I mean, I didn't start this business with two horses and tell somebody I would win over 2,000 races. You know, it just kind of happened along the way. So it's not so much the destination where you get, it's the journey there.
Well, you got off to a great start in 1981 with that very first winner, Kim's Lucky Spot at Detroit Race Course. What do you remember about that day?
It just, you know, it's always special when you win a race, but when you win a race, you know, with a horse, whether it's for somebody else or your own, it's always special. And it's an achievement, you know, it's an accomplishment, especially, you know, he was another one owned by the breeder. And, you know, just watching him develop and get there, it's a big, big deal.
Was there a moment, and maybe that was the moment, Kathleen, but was there a moment at some point when you were coming up and getting started that you said, yeah, you know what, I can actually do this?
No, I don't think. I mean, you have to have an expandable baseball hat to wear in this business, because when you think you're smart and you're lucky and everything's going right, you let it out. And then when you've got the horse on three legs with a bad foot, and this one dumped the rider and ran off, and this one did something else, you think you're dumb, and you have to let that cat back in a few notches. So, you know, to me, it's all a learning thing.
You know, there will be several young trainers in Florida and around the country that are at the same racetracks that you are, and they're going to watch you, and they're going to see how you do things because you've had so much success now. So when you were coming up, were there trainers that you would pay attention to and say, you know what, that I'd like to be like that one day, and if I can do things the way that they're doing it, then, you know, maybe I can get there? Were there certain trainers like that?
Well, I paid attention to everybody that I worked for. I think, you know, people that win races and people that train horses are a lot like people raising kids. Everybody gets the job done. Some of them turn out different. You handle all of them, I think, a little different. And you see even children in the same house grow up different. So I think a trainer has to be in tune to the horses because they all have different needs. You know, some, no matter, you know, some need different feed, some need a different person on them in the morning, some need a different person caring for them. And I just think it's being very observant to everything that makes it all work out.
How long does it take you to realize what each individual horse is going to need to be at their best?
Oh, I think it's a daily experience.
Really?
I think it's a daily growing experience. I feel very, very blessed and very, very lucky that I have a good support team in my, you know, in my health. And from the people that walk the horses to the people that groom the horses to the people that ride the horses, you know, I feel like I've got a good mix. And it takes a team to put it all together. And I feel very blessed that most of the riders that work for me are all ex-jockeys. I mean, down south alone, I have Sebastian Madrid, Jose Gutierrez, Ariel Smith, Manny Alaric. I mean, they probably win 10,000 races between them all. And, I mean, you can get good feedback, you know. It's a good thing from the people that are, you know, walking the horse around that notice it's not as lively as it was yesterday, and maybe it's still laid up, but maybe it's trying to get sick. But, I mean, I just think it's everybody working together and reading the horse to try and help it the best that we can.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I'm so glad that you bring up the people that are part of your team, Kathleen, because you mentioned the word perseverance, and you said you have to be, you have to have that dedication, that perseverance to be successful in this sport, and there's no doubt about it. But another word that comes up when you talk about Kathleen O'Connell is the word loyalty, and a lot of those people and your assistant trainers have been with you for a long time. So talk about the people on that side of things that help you be successful.
Well, they're instrumental. I would be nothing without them because, you know, with me, I've been pretty hands-on and I still am and I will continue to be. And when I can't, that's when I want to quit because I want to be a horse trainer, not a horse manager. And I think they're all a very important part of the equation because, you know, I don't do more than two locations. Right now I'm at Tampa Bay and I'm at Gulfstream Park West. But I am 1 week at one place and 1 week the next place and 1 week back in Miami and 1 week in Tampa. So without the people knowing how we operate, like the training sheet gets back to the location that I'm not at, everything gets faxed back and forth, you know, the comments from them and the riders and the people where I'm not, so we can stay in tune with each other. And without the fact that they've worked for me for a long time and they know how we schedule things and how we do things, that it wouldn't be possible to do it all.
Yeah, especially when you're dividing your time between multiple racetracks the way that you are now. And you mentioned the term hands-on and wanting to be hands-on. There are so many trainers that have come on this program over the years, Kathleen, and said that same thing. What does it mean for a trainer to be a hands-on trainer?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm at the locations at 4 o'clock in the morning. We check legs. We check feed tubs. You know, we make sure everybody's all right to train. You know, I ride the pony. I don't gallop anymore because my back got so bad. I'm on the track all morning, whether it's at Tampa or whether it's at Miami. So I think you're a little closer to what you're doing and a little closer to the action, which has always been important to me. And, you know, it's like my help laughs. When I'm there, I usually run bandages in the afternoon, not because they can't do it, because they certainly do a good job when I'm not there, but it's just, I don't know, it's just old habits die hard.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, because we were trying to set up this interview now for a couple of weeks, and people don't realize that it's not like training ends at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you punch out, and you're done. Your day doesn't end then, at that point, does it?
No, and, you know, at 10 o'clock when the track closes, there's always, you know, horses to go over and horses to recheck. What's fine at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning might not be fine at 10 o'clock. You know, that's how much this whole thing changes or your barn changes. And then, you know, there's entries to be made, and maybe a horse you were going to enter didn't eat up or got a temperature or didn't train up to expectations, so now you're not going to enter them. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it.
We're visiting with trainer Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Going to get to a short commercial break. We'll be back with the second half of the program, and we'll talk about some of her signature moments in her career, including a little horse by the name of Blazing Sword. And
nominate now to the 2019 Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-Year-Old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-Year-Old sale in America last year. It's the Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at PhasicTipton.com.
Now standing at Buck Pond Farm, Bet on Red, Wildcat Red.
Wildcat Red runs away to an impressive score in the Hutchison.
After winning the Grade 3 Hutchison, Wildcat Red goes on to win the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth in near record time. Faster than Pulpit, faster than Thunder Gulch, and faster than 49er. Multiple graded stakes winner and Grade 1 performing millionaire, Wildcat Red. Also standing at Buck Pond, V.E. Day. After winning three in a row at Belmont and Saratoga, V.E. Day wins the Grade 1 Traverse in one of the most exciting finishes in history with a speed rating of 112.
But here comes V-E-Day with a final try. Who will win the Traverse? It will be too close to call!
Major League Belmont and Saratoga talent, V-E-Day. For more information, contact Buck Pond Farm at www.buckpond.com.
You know, it's never too late to start talking racing at Woodbine. Major race dates you can look forward to later this year include the Woodbine Oaks on June 8th, the Queen's Plate June 29th, the Woodbine Mile September 14th, the Grade 1 Summer in Natalma Stakes on September 15th, and the Grade 1 Canadian International October 12th. Opening day at Woodbine, April 20th, turf racing beginning mid-May. Tickets on sale for the two-day Queen's Plate Festival right now. Visit woodbine.com/queensplate.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
After becoming the only two-time Breeders' Cup Classic winner ever, Tisnow was just getting started. The leading first crop sire of his generation has now sired 15 Grade 1 winners to date. From brilliant sprinters to classic winners, Tisnow's progeny are always in demand, boasting a lifetime yearling average of $157,000, higher than Quality Road and Into Mischief. Book now. Book Tisnow. A proven choice for almost every mare.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Deer into the stretch. Watch me go on the outside. Crimson Knight between horses. Brotherman is toward the rail. There's 100 yards to come. Crimson Knight, watch me go on the outside. Watch me go with Crimson Knight. They'll come to the wire. Heads apart in a driving finish. Watch me go. Unbelievable effort by Crimson Knight. Brethren falters to be third. Beamer runs on to be fourth in an incredible Tampa Bay Derby in 144-1. Congratulations to Gilbert Campbell and Kathleen O'Connell.
Richard Grunder with the call of that 2011 Tampa Bay Derby. Congratulations to the connections indeed, including our special guest tonight, Kathleen O'Connell. Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Mike Penna in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. Happy to have you back with me. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Kathleen, what a moment that was. Watch Me Go, a horse that would take you to your first and to this point your only Kentucky Derby. What a win that was in a day for you in that Tampa Bay Derby.
Yes, it was. It meant so much for Mr. Campbell, who, you know, long-time relationships in this business are far and few in between. So to think it was for him and with a homebred was especially... And for it to happen at Tampa Bay, because since all the racing closed at Detroit, that's kind of been my adopted home.
Yeah, and you talk about Mr. Campbell, Gil and Marilyn Campbell, Stonehedge. It's a relationship that goes back more than 2.5 decades. What has made that relationship work for so long?
They're great people. He was in the business, you know, before I started training for him. I think he knows how this business goes, how it can be, you know, chicken one day and feathers the next, so to speak, and he has a true grasp of it. And as long as there's good communication, you know, I just think about anything can be accomplished.
Did you always have a sense that Watch Me Go was a horse that could be that caliber?
He always was special. I mean, he actually won 4 races before he ran in the Tampa Bay Derby. And, you know, he had a few foot issues and this and that. And although he was always special to me, you know, he was probably just a tad, a notch below that caliber. But you know, the Tampa Bay Derby win, I mean, I'll take a win any way you can take it. You know, even I remember winning the Widener at Hialeah with Blazing Sword through a DQ. And actually, the horse that the winner bothered was the horse that finished third, not me. But, you know, I'll take it any way you can get it.
When Watch Me Go was making that move, that kind of sweeping move at the top of the stretch in the Tampa Bay Derby that year, do you remember your reaction as you're watching him and you're thinking, wow, we might actually win this thing?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, we were screaming, needless to say, to beat the band. Brian Smeek, who's been with me for 20 years, I say, it was just a wonderful, wonderful moment. And, I mean, we didn't win it by much, but we won it. So, like I said, that's all that counts at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I mentioned that he would take you to the Kentucky Derby for the first time. What do you remember about that experience?
Oh, everything. I mean, you know, the Derby is very, very special. And even for as many years as I had trained, from 81 to 2000, and 11 when we made it to the Derby, there's the whole experience there is unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable, more unbelievable than a Breeders' Cup. I mean, I can remember the walk over, and it's like you're passing through the sea of people. I mean, you know, it's just, I've been to a lot of sporting events, but I've never seen people like you see on all those bleachers and everything that extends from the grandstand and everything else.
I know you grew up in Detroit and you've made a living now in Florida, but when Watch Me Go came onto the track to the playing of my old Kentucky home, did you get a little emotional?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, for me, I get pretty emotional any race. You can ask my help. Nobody wants to stand by me.
Afraid they're going to get hit with a program? Are you one of those people, or is it just more?
More, they're worried about my hand more than a program. or my foot. I can remember one time at Tampa, you know, before they had all the TVZ and stuff on that you could watch it on TV, and I remember me and a groom going to watch one of our horses that were running at Miami on the TV up there. And I can remember I had gone, we were running so late, I had just ran in that tent that they have at Tampa and watched on a big screen TV they have there with Pedro, my groom. And I remember they were coming down the lane, and it was on a horse named Chris the Great. And I kept stamping my feet, and screaming, just totally oblivious to anybody else that was in the picnic area there. And I remember he won, and I remember a man saying, it's a good thing you switched feet, or he wouldn't have got there.
Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton, as good at switching leads as her horses are on the racetrack. And now, Kathleen, you get to go down this road again with Gill and Marilyn and Stonehedge with Well Defined and a horse. And I'll let you tell me if he's still on the Derby trail. But he was very impressive in winning the Sam F. Davis, came back, was a little disappointing, I would say, in the Tampa Bay Derby. Is he a horse that's still on the trail?
Not really. We had opted to give him some time. When he was in the paddock at for the Tampa Bay Derby, he kind of reared up and spun, and it really seemed like he compromised a long muscle in his back. And, you know, I don't think it's anything serious. I mean, you never know with a muscle. Plus, he got caught up in a speed duel. But since the horse has nothing but a racing career, since he is a gelding, Mr. Campbell and Marilyn and myself all made the agreement to just give them some time, and, you know, there'll be a lot of nice races for three-year-olds.
Yeah, very much so. And it, you know, I think that's one thing, if people have listened to this interview the past 40 minutes or so, they know that one thing about Kathleen O'Connell is she's going to do what's right for the horse first and foremost, and then everything else will take care of itself. One thing you did with Well Defined before he won the Sam F. Davis is you made the decision to put blinkers on him. And for people, Kathleen, that may not know the purpose of blinkers, talk about that and talk about how a trainer knows the right time to make that move with a horse.
Well, you know, the horse was always the mischievous horse. I actually called him Dennis the Menace. And if you would saw his mannerisms and so forth in the morning, you know, he was always a horse that I thought might need blinkers. But the races are short, and for two-year-olds and when he was starting out, and he just showed so much raw speed that I really didn't want to soup him up anymore, and he seemed fine and comfortable when he was running. You know, I always think that as a horse, after he breaks his maiden and you're going to a race against winners, you have to ultimately have more things in your favor because the competition's going to be better and stronger. And I had kept the blinkers off because he just seemed to relax more. And even for the in reality, when we stretched him out, he was relaxed. He made the front, and he stayed busy about his business and so on. As we got to some of the other races, the Breeders' Cup race being one of them, and the Mucho Macho Man, it just seemed like he'd get distracted with other horses around him. He wasn't focusing as much. And that's when I decided to put the blinkers on for the Sam Davis.
Is it as easy a decision for a trainer? I don't even know if that's the right way to ask this question, Kathleen, but when you have a horse that's raced with blinkers for much of his career and you have to take the blinkers off, is that as easy to decipher for a trainer?
Well, I think when what you're doing fails to work, you have to look for another alternative. And that's when the blinkers on, blinkers off, or perhaps a change of bit or, you know, something else, you know, causes you to make that decision. But again, like I say, to me, you just have to be in tune with the horse, in tune with the people getting on it, in tune with the jack riding it, or whether it's somebody working it in the morning. Like I say, I think you just have to utilize all this information and then draw the best decision you can.
How do you determine which jockey is right for which horse?
I like to have a few jockeys in mind to discuss it with the owners and discuss the availability and so on. I don't think any one rider, as much as I like any of the riders that ride for me, all fit one horse. I just don't think that. And although they're all great riders and so on, you know, some of them have a little softer hands, some of them have a little more patience, some of them are what I call power riders or finishers at the end, some of them are more finesse riders, and I just try and match the horse with the rider. And then I do like to discuss it with the owner, so that it's a joint decision in what we choose.
What's the most bizarre set of instructions that you've ever had to give a jockey in the paddock?
Well, I can't think of any bizarre ones except, you know, on some of my more difficult horses, I'll say, I just want you one leg on either side and the horse between the fences.
Just keep him on the track.
Exactly.
Kathleen O'Connell with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Kathleen, well-defined is a Florida bred, and Florida breds have played such a big role in your success over the years. Talk a little bit about that for a minute.
Well, I can't say enough good things about Florida breds. You know, they've definitely been my bread and butter for years. And, you know, I think Florida has one of the best breeding programs there are. They grow a good horse, you know. I think the weather and everything helps them out. You know, they're good bones. And like I say, I certainly can't say anything too negative about them. They've been wonderful, wonderful, wonderful to me.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago on March 11th, I had the privilege of being asked to MC the FTBOA awards banquet, and it was a really special night, and I know a special night for you. You were honored as the leading trainer of Florida Breds by wins for an 11th time, and you came up on stage, and it was an emotional moment for you. What made it so emotional, Kathleen?
Well, I really hadn't counted on them showing my mom and dad's picture on the big screen, which they were there with me when Scandalous Act had won the three-year-old female champion. And I lost them both within 60 days. So it's been a little rough spot in my world. But I know at the end of the day, they were very proud.
Yeah, I would say they certainly were. And, you know, one thing that struck me is when I announced you as the winner of that award and you were walking up, it was probably the loudest round of applause of any recipient the entire evening, and that was pretty cool.
Well, I think I've had a rapport with them because I've been up there so long, but thank God they're not tired of me.
No, they definitely weren't tired of you, and it was great to see you up there, and that emotion was certainly something that I know that everybody appreciated, and very sorry to hear that news about your parents. Let's turn it back to the horses a little bit here, and maybe a little happier topic, so to speak. But how about that horse you mentioned earlier, a little horse by the name of Blazing Sword, who actually provided you with your first graded stakes win? Tell me a little bit about him.
Blazing Sword was just an outstanding horse, period. And he was another Dennis the Menace type horse. And I could not believe, if you view at the very first race, and here's a horse that, you know, a trainer and an owner can get highly, highly excited about because he exhibited so much in his first start. And, you know, even though he was very playful, he really loved to train. He loved to breathe. He loved to run. He loved everything. So here we are for our first race. It's going 4.5 furlongs at the old Calder race course. And when they said, and they're off, and they said, and it's Blazing Sword, slow to start. And he must have been 10 lengths behind the last horse in the pack going 4.5 furlongs, and he got beat a nose. And all I could think of is what a future this horse had. Because, I mean, here's a horse that's bred to go long and longer. Here's a horse that gets stone left at the gate, only because he was looking around, you know, being curious, and, you know, to run like that.
Yeah, pretty special. And you kind of get a sense there, I guess the excitement level goes to a whole new high, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, and especially because after the race, it was like, I mean, you could almost see it in his face, like when he got left and he's running, it was like, oh, I was supposed to lead now, you know? And then he runs, and, you know, like I say, even going 5 furlongs, he would have won that day. And, you know, he was such a great-minded horse, and I think that's such an important part of a good racehorse. You know, after the race, he wasn't all fractious or geeked out or anything like that. He just was, you know, happy to participate and didn't care about the crowd, didn't care about noise, didn't care about anything.
Would he be considered the horse that really took you to a new level?
He probably took me to a level, and he was the first horse I had that made over $1 million. So, I mean, he's will always be a very, very special horse.
Yeah, 11 wins from 45 starts, $1.18 million for Blazing Sword, another Florida bred that was so good to you.
Yes, and I mean, that's really hard to do back in the day. I mean, the purses weren't as high and everything, but, you know, I would say, you know, one of the horses that really got me started, you know, before I got stalled down here in 1990, I shipped a lot of times to run. And a lot of times I came down with a horse named Modern Messy. And she was gray and she was made of iron, I swear. I would throw the lights on at the training center at midnight because for when you start shipping horses, you experiment with a lot of things of how they'll ship better. You know, you think, oh, 2 days in front and I'll go down there, but everything's so different. They don't eat and they don't, you know, function right, and they're in a strange place, and sometimes they don't like the water, and you're dragging bottled water, and sometimes that doesn't work. And an old gentleman that trained for years named Carol Barnhill, I think he's retired and up in Ocala now, he was at Tampa, and he came up to me, and he goes, you know, he says, the best way to ship them is in the cool of the night. You leave at midnight, you get here at 6 in the morning, and then you run them, and they're fresh. And I'm there like, you know, I'd game to try anything. And really, that was the way to go. But when I would go throw on the lights at midnight, should be in the stall rearing up, should practically run me over, nickering to get on the horse trailer. She loved to travel. And when she came off of the trailer 5 hours later, she'd be dragging me into the receiving barn. And I started with her. She belonged to a man named Michael and Cynthia Sierra in Odessa, Florida, there by Tampa. And they were a small breeder. And she, I don't think she was off the board in like 8 starts down here. And they she even finished. She was a long-distance specialist, better on the turf. And she even ran second to a horse named Primal that Mr. Bracken had down here that was one of the first horses sold that went over to Dubai. But she loved to travel, and, you know, because she was gray and all her squealing and carrying on antics and the fact that she ran good off the trailer, you know, a lot of people took notice. So, like I say, I finally collected enough horses and to come down to Calder in 1990. Terry Meeks had given me my first stall. He was the racing secretary here, 8 stalls in the receiving barn, and, you know, the rest grew and became history.
Wow, that's a great story. Why was Florida the place that you wanted to be as opposed to bringing horses to maybe closer locations like New York or Maryland or someplace like that?
It was the baby program, and when I got the stalls in 1990 was the first year I had met Mr. Campbell, and I had met Mr. Campbell through a gentleman named Daryl Solly that had was working at a Pendray's farm, and I had some horses for them at Tampa, and Daryl always knew I liked the young horses, and he knew Mr. Campbell had some babies that he wanted to keep in Florida, being Florida breds. And that was kind of how it all started. I mean, Florida had one of the best, you know, two-year-old plans that there was, especially when all 3 racetracks were running. I mean, it was just a mecca of two-year-olds.
Yeah, Kathleen O'Connell began her career in Detroit. If you are just joining us on this program, she talked about that in the first half of the show. She grew up around Detroit Racecourse, was working there for a stint, and then started training horses and got her first win at Detroit and now making a mark in the industry down in Florida. And she's been doing it for a very, very long time. Kathleen, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the name Ivana Vinalot and a horse that really did well for you, but became quite famous afterwards as a broodmare.
Yes, as the mother of Songbird.
Yeah. And what's that like for you when you watch her and see what she accomplished on that side of things?
It's just great. I mean, it's just like watching your kid go to college and graduate, and, you know, it's just had everything to it. I mean, it was I was just really, really enamored and thrilled with it because she was such a good racehorse herself. And, you know, she had not the greatest conformation, and she walked like a duck and ran like a deer. And she was just a great horse for the Campbells and myself. And she was just so much fun to watch.
Isn't it amazing how you'll have horses like that that maybe aren't the best movers when they walk, but then all of a sudden they get on the racetrack and they become a whole different animal?
It's amazing. And, you know, I always equate it to, you know, you see 6 couples dancing on the floor and they're all doing the tango. But, you know, there's always 1, maybe 2, that just stand out. They glide, they flow, they've got chemistry, and, you know, they love it and they want to do it. And I think, you know, a good racehorse has that heart and desire, you know, just like a football player or a baseball player or really any kind of athlete.
You know, I'll ask a lot of trainers this question on the show here, Kathleen. You know, so many times we'll hear a golfer talk about the best shot that they've ever hit, or a basketball player say, that was the purest shot that I ever made. So for you as a horse trainer, what would you consider to be the greatest training job that you ever did with any horse?
Well, I don't think that you could, with the number of horses I've had, I'm proud of a lot of them, from the ones that ran for 12.5 or 10,000 at Tampa that contributed. I think, you know, the greatest attribute to me is the consistency that my team and me have done over the past 10 years as far as the winning the Florida Bred Award and some of the other awards we've done. I mean, it's like a lot of businesses. I mean, some people are here today and gone tomorrow, or here for a few years and then gone. But the staying power of my whole group.
Yeah, well said. Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Kathleen, believe it or not, we are down to about the final 3 minutes of the program. We haven't even talked about a horse by the name of Lady Shipman and how good Lady Shipman was, but went to the 2015 Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint at Keeneland, finished second, beating just a neck to Mongolian Saturday. Spend just a minute talking about that moment with Lady Shipman.
Well, even in defeat, I was so proud of her, because you have to think, she's a three-year-old filly at a premier race against older horses and older males at that. And to be second, there was nothing shameful. Maybe nobody will remember who was second but me. But but like I say, to me, it was a great attribute to her, a very, very great attribute.
Yeah, very much so. She ran her heart out that day. I remember we were there doing the broadcast of the event, and she ran her eyeballs out and came up just a little bit short. But it's always nice when you have a horse like that that puts their best foot forward every single time you put a saddle on them, isn't it?
Exactly. At every location, she just had such a great mind, and, you know, she was all racehorse. That's all there is. And I believe she's in fold to American Pharoah, so we might see something super special.
Ooh, that could be really special. Yeah, American Pharoah really making a mark and, very, very hot right now, as you would expect as a stallion. I'm going to look forward to seeing that baby for sure, Kathleen. I always like to end this program by asking trainers to share a little bit about themselves that people might not know. So outside of horse racing, we talked about your love of sports and your love of Michigan State and cheering for them to get through this NCAA tournament. How about other interests? What else do you enjoy doing if indeed you do get time to pay attention to something outside of horse racing?
Well, outside of horse racing, I have a big love for the water. Anything that has to do with the water, whether it's rowing a boat or kayaking or water skiing, anything that has to do with the outside and water.
Was that from growing up in Michigan? Would you go to Lake Michigan or anything?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Michigan has 10,000 lakes. And, you know, that's one thing I could say. My dad might work all kind of shifts and midnights and everything else, but, you know, weekdays, which was a great day, you know, he'd pack the car, pack the picnic blankets, and I don't know how the hell he could ever sleep with 10 million kids screaming in the lake, but he managed to. And like I say, we had always had a great time at the lake, always.
Well, Kathleen, it's been quite a ride, and you're not done yet. A lot still to accomplish, so I want to wish you all the best, and thank you for joining me here on Trainer Talk. It's been a delight to hear your story. You told me during the break we had to fit 40 years into 1 hour. I don't know if we accomplished that, but we had a heck of a visit here tonight.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate it. Trainer Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Don't forget, if you missed any portion, just head back to our website. It's all there for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And, wow, what a story. Story of perseverance and dedication, and somebody who has now taken her career to a whole new level. More than 2,000 winners, more than $38 million in purses, several great stakes winners. Tremendous visit. My thanks to Kathleen. My thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, here in our studios. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.